And when I removed Alfonso's hand from Clarita's, I saw, with my unbelieving eyes, the clear marks or impressions of human-like teeth from both upper and lower jaws. It was a little moist in the area bitten on the dorsal aspect of the left hand, and the teeth impressions were mostly from the form of the front or incisor teeth. Seeing these with my unbelieving eyes, yet I couldn't understand or explain how they were produced, as her hand had all the time been held away from the reach of her mouth, and that the place where the bite impressions occurred, on the dorsal of the left hand, was the very place held by my assistant Alfonso. I knew she couldn't bite herself, nor could Alfonso, who doesn't possess a single tooth. And I'm sure that I did not bite the girl, causing the impressions on her hand. Not finding any possible explanation, so far as my human experience and medical training is concerned, I kept my mouth shut. But not my mind. Clarita kept on screaming for about 15 minutes with this bite on her left hand, and she turned bluish in the face and legs as if being choked. There were also a few reddish welts in front of the neck occurring with this phenomenon. After about 20 minutes of this attack, accompanied by stiffness and screaming, her body became soft in a trance-like condition, which was a repetition of the observation made when she was first brought into the room. After about 10 minutes of this trance, she gradually recovered consciousness and shortly thereafter became normal again. In this normal condition, she sat on a chair and the group of interns talked with her. She answered all the questions that were propounded to her sanely and intelligently, in which she recounted the story, something to the effect as follows: that she was born in Bacola City in the province of Negros Occidental, that she'd had several brothers, and that she's not interested in them as they've been unkind to her, and that her parents died several years ago. In full possession of her normal mind, I asked her who was causing her to suffer from the bite. She answered there were two who were alternately biting her. One big, black-haired, human-like fellow, very tall, with two sharp eyes and two sharp canine teeth, long beard like a Hindu, hairy extremities and chest, wearing a black garment with a little whitish piece on the black resembling a hood, or on the back resembling a hood. His feet are about three times the size of normal feet. The other fellow is a small one, about 2 or 3 feet tall, allegedly also black, hairy, and ugly. Doesn't match the white stories in the newspaper. So, newspapers need to recheck the medical record. I asked her why these two fellows bite her, and she answered that they wanted to take her and make her go away with them, but that she doesn't want because she's afraid of them. I asked her where they are now. Clarita explained they're gone. But at the time when she's attacked, they're near her and she can see them, and that the sign when they're near is when her eyes are staring in a certain fixed direction. I asked her, is this the first time, or have you had previous experience with these big and small black fellows that are biting you? She answered, I was never bitten before the night of the 10th of May, 1953. But I remember when I was young and before my mother died, she used to take care of similar spirits, feeding them with the meat of white hogs or white chickens once a year. Just before my mother died, she wanted to let me inherit and take care of these spirits that she was taking care of, but I refused and did not so, owing to my fear of them. How old are you? Now we're getting down to something. It's always a connection, friends. Always a connection. Demon forces never have unlimited power. Always a boundary back to Beowulf. Leave them there. In the dark of the evening, Grendel lumbered into the empty hall hunting for food. One thing alone he could not touch. Only that had God forbidden him to soil. Now, as always, I'm going to start looking for common denominators. One thing alone he could not touch. Only that had God forbidden him to soil. Now, let's save that for a minute. There was wretchedness in the land, sorrow, wretchedness, and cold fear. Hrothgar and his few trusty earls held meetings and tried to find an answer. They prayed to their idols. They cooked up new magic broths. They called upon their pagan gods to thwart all dragons, all fiends, all evil, all nightmares. In their hearts, they thought only of hell, not knowing, not having yet heard of the Lord God. Cursed is he who slips from the true path and hands his soul back to the hell fires. Blessed is he who on the day of his death finds peace in the breast of his Maker. Hrothgar lived on, his days flowing from a cup of sorrow, powerless in the grip of the ogre, beaten and heartsick. What's the truth from which this embellished tale flows from? Receive. These were black days, shadowed the awesome blackness of night. Meanwhile, in the land of the Geats, of Sweden, across the sea, the bitter news had come. The sorrows of Denmark reached in time the ears of the Geats. King Hygelac heard it and mourned. His earls heard it and shuddered. Beowulf heard the news. Of the race of men, he was the strongest. Boldest among the bold was this vassal of Hygelac. Greatest in heart among all the great hearts was this chief of the Geats, this Beowulf. Come, let us haul down the ship, cried Beowulf, over the path of the seabird, through the wake of the swan. Let us fly to Denmark, he said. The king of the Danes needs men. At first, the wise elderman nearest King Hygelac's throne worried and fretted, for the sea was wide and Beowulf dear to them all. Finally, they yielded, however, and helped him choose 15 strong warriors. Then they studied their hidden lore and found that their gods were willing. One of their number was called, who knew the paths of the sea and who spoke to Beowulf of the tides and the landmarks. He warned him of black rocks and swirling shoals. Under the sea-girt cliffs, the shining ship was readied, laden with coats of mail, swords, and gleaming war hornets, and bidding farewell to their king, the sturdy warriors embarked. Last of them all strode their mighty leader, his feet strong and steady on the bobbing craft. Turning their backs on Sweden, the fearless warriors cast off and leaned to the oars. Like a bird, like a swallow, like a slender gull, the glistening ship sped forward. She cut a path through the clear green sea, her prow wreathed in bubbles and foam. The winds caught her like a bird and blew her swiftly southward. Across unknown waters, the light floater lunged and plowed into the swells. The salt spray blew strong on the warriors' foreheads. By the first hour of the second day, the dark fjords of Denmark rose on the skyline, reaching up toward the clouds from their tide-beaten sands. Sounding cautiously and tacking, the pilot brought the swift craft unarmed or unharmed to the shore. The sea lanes had been followed aright. The coast had been won. From his lighthouse on the cliff, the coast guard of Hrothgar saw the Geats disembarking. Spurring his horse, he galloped down to the shore and bespoke them. Who are you, warriors in war dress, who clamber from your sea-going ships? I am an Earl of Hrothgar, King of the Danes. Never have shield-bearers so grim of face ever landed before on our shores. Do you at least know the password? Then, as he spoke, the Danish Earl suddenly saw the leader, Beowulf. In fright and amazement, he stepped backward. His hand shook on the horse's rein. Never in my life, stammered the Dane, have I seen a man like this one. Who in the world is this warrior? He asked, still staring at Beowulf. Surely this is a hero, one we must know for his deeds of strength. Please, may I know your kindred and the aim of your trip to this coast? Beowulf unlocked his word hoard. We come indeed from across the sea. We are folks and vassals of Hygelac, king of the Geats. Perhaps you've heard of my father. His name was Yggdrasil. The Dane gasped. His guess had been right. This was in truth a hero and the son of a hero. My warriors and I have come to your land as friends, Beowulf went on. Have no fear of us. We've heard of some fiend of darkness who is foully mistreating your king. Perhaps we can help him. Then hasten back to your ships, bade the coast guard. Dress yourselves in coats of mail, grasp your shields and axes. Hurry, I'll lead you to Hero's Hall. Take no thought for your ship. I'll see she's well guarded, circled about with hawsers. Her mighty heart shall find rest in our waters. Setting their boar helmets well over their ears, sacred to the goddess Freya, the fierce warriors from Geatland strode up the sea cliffs after their leader. Shortly, the lofty gables and gleaming roof of Harold Hall came into sight. They stopped and wondered at its cunning workmanship, for truly there was not a building like it in all the world. The coast guard left them, still gazing up at the high turrets. The warriors drew near the hall over a street of stones. Their swords clanged against mail. On an outer gate to the castle, they rested their shields and they climbed the stairs to the door. Let me skip ahead. Beowulf. And Grendel. He got permission to stay in the hall that night. Carls, or common people, stood ready to take from Beowulf his coat of mail, his helmet, and his heavy sword. Then the Geat laid down on the pile of furs that had been set for him, laid his cheek against the bolster and waited. His men also lay down to sleep. Tired from their long sail and the frightening tales of the day and the evening, they could not know whether they would ever see another sunrise. You realize Warren Bard is strumming and telling this from memory? Or if they would live through the night to follow the sea tracks home to Sweden. The night was cold and very still. The fire in the central hearth had burned low. Soon all but Beowulf slept. Then through the black moors wreathed in fog, Grendel came creeping, God's ire upon him. Out of the swirling mist, he stalked with outstretched claws, hunting for the dimly lighted hall. To his wonderment, the door was barred. Grendel had not foreseen that. With a snarl, the fiend stepped backward, stiffened his muscles, and lunged at it. I'm boring you.
No.
Iron bars sprung loose. Wood splintered. The door burst from its hinges. Grendel was inside the great hall. All about him, the Geatish warriors lay stretched out on their fur beds, sunk in sleep, heedless, unhearing. For a second, Grendel stopped to scan them. Darts of red fire shot from his deep-set eyes. Rolling his huge head from side to side, Grendel glared about him. Then he laughed. From his end of the hall, Beowulf watched the ogre, weighed his endowments, and waited to see how Grendel would strike. Quick as a wink, the fiend pulled at the warrior nearest him, cracked his bones in one twist, ripped the body with his talons, split open the jugular, and drank the hot blood as it gushed from the torn throat. Then he ravenously broke apart the hands and the feet and swallowed them. Without warning, Grendel suddenly dropped the mangled body and sprang straight across the hall at Beowulf. The hero had raised himself on his left elbow. Beowulf had just time to stretch forth his right arm as the ogre rushed upon him. Then, since I have to read these devil stories and demon things to you to set the stage for some solid, intelligent teaching on demonology, say, this is scary. Well, the Gadarenes were scared around the Sea of Galilee. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs? Is Annabelle alive, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves. She acts alive. No, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie. Pointing across the table, she's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. Now, years building some credibility. And if I'm destroying it by trying to provide some evidence that around this world there are a lot of people that believe in demons and there's a lot of experiences going on that are being ignored by intelligent people, then I'm going to quit. I got other subjects I can talk about. I'm trying to achieve several things. You know, one of the things I'm trying to do is to let the world know there's some marvelous literature out there. That's why I'm reading Beowulf. But I also want you to understand that there is a germ of truth and a source, a root from which these embellished stories grow. And it'll surprise you what that root is. You can't really understand much that goes on in the world if you don't know the Bible, Old and New Testament, particularly the Old Testament. And one thing's wrong with too many Christians, they don't know the Old Testament well enough. But I'm also trying to gestalt the reality of strange phenomenon that deserve a look. It's equally disintelligent to rule out the supernatural as it is to explain what you can't at first glance understand always is supernatural. Now, I've been on a lot of subjects: pyramid, Atlantis, lost tribes, the stars, Bermuda Triangle. Probably the most controversial one I'm on is demonology, but it's time that somebody look at it with intelligence. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs? Questioned Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves. She acts alive. But no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Now, I'm not going to catch anybody up that just joined me. I'm reading from the demonologist, but Gerald Bridley, Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. They're in the house of a couple referred there by an Episcopalian priest who was called to these two nurses and the boyfriend of one of them. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Why'd everybody get off the phone? I don't care if they call and talk and interrupt me. It doesn't bother me tonight. Normally it bothers me. But tonight it doesn't bother me if they call and interrupt me. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs? Questioned Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves, she acts alive, but no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. You weren't there when I was reading this before. Have demons moved things around in here? Somebody disappeared. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs? Questioned Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves. She acts alive. But no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left in the living room. Now, do you understand what I'm doing? I'm just trying to cover the territory. I mean, I believe that lots of people out there have heard stories like this and been afraid to talk to anybody about it for fear they'd think they were nuts. My first impression is there's a rational explanation to everything. But I'm having a hard time finding it. It's getting harder and harder. It really is getting harder and harder to figure out how these things happen naturally. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna. Angie replied. Belongs? Question, Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves. She acts alive. But no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left into the living room. This is the true Rocky Docky horror show. They're mocking me. They're not taking this serious. They're to blame if I have to quit. I'll start over now. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. Who's Ed? Well, he's the husband of Lorraine, the demonologist, subject to this book. Who's Annabelle? Nobody cares now. Who is Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs, questioned Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, breathing being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quizzically. She moves. She acts alive. But no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room. Well, if she's not alive, what's she doing in the living room? That doesn't make sense, does it? Living people are in living rooms. Annabelle's in the living room, said. I'm reading from the demonologist. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. You don't want me to continue, do you? This is more fun than continuing. Glad Halloween only comes once a year. Who's Annabelle? Ed promptly asked. She belongs to Donna, Angie replied. Belongs, questioned Lorraine. Is Annabelle a live, living being? Is she alive? Donna repeated quickly. She moved. Jack's alive, but no, I don't think she's alive. Annabelle's in the living room, said Angie, pointing across the table. She's sitting on the sofa. Lorraine looked to her left, into the living room. Are you talking, she said, about that doll? That's right, Angie replied, the big Raggedy Ann doll. That's Annabelle. She moves. Ed got up and walked into the living room to inspect the doll. It was big and heavy, the size of a 4-year-old child, sitting with its legs stretched out on the sofa. The black, pupilless eyes stared back at him, while the painted-on smile gave the doll an expression of grim irony. Looking it over without touching the thing, Ed returned to the kitchen. Where did the doll come from? Ed asked Donna. It was a gift, Donna replied. My mother gave it to me on my last birthday. Is there some reason why she brought you or bought you a doll? Ed wondered. No, it's just something novel, a decoration, the young nurse answered. Okay, Ed went on. When did you first start noticing activity occur? About a year ago, said Donna. The doll started to move around the apartment by itself. I can't read this. I'm going to lose all credibility. There won't be anybody at my anniversary on November 4th. I don't want Annabelle there. I mean, Annabelle can just stay home. I'll stick my dogs on Annabelle. About a year ago, said Donna, the doll started to move around the apartment by itself. I don't mean it got up and walked around or any such thing. I mean, when we'd come home from work, it would never be quite where we left it. Explain that part a little more, Ed requested. After I got the doll from a birthday, Donna explained, I'd put it on my bed each morning after the bed was made. The arms would be off to its sides and the legs would be straight out, just like it's sitting there now. But when we'd come home at night, the arms and legs would be positioned in different gestures. For instance, its legs would be crossed at the ankles or its arms would be folded in its lap. After a week or so, this made us suspicious. You want me to continue?
Yes,
after a week or so, this made us suspicious. So to test it, I purposely crossed its arms and legs in the morning to see if it really was moving. Sure enough, every night when we'd come back home, the arms and legs would be uncrossed. And the thing would be sitting there in any of a dozen different postures. Yeah, but it did more than that, Angie put in. The doll also changed rooms by itself. We came home one night and the Annabelle doll was sitting in a chair by the front door. It was kneeling. Funny thing about it was, when we tried to make the doll kneel, it'd just fall over. It couldn't kneel. Other times we'd find it sitting on the sofa, although when we left the apartment in the morning, it'd be in Donna's room with the door closed. Anything else, Lorraine asked? Yes, said Donna. Anything else? Lorraine asked. Yes, said Donna. Anything else? Lorraine asked. Yes, said Donna. It would leave us little notes and messages. I can't read this. The handwriting looked to be that of a small child. What did the notes say? Ed questioned. It would say things that meant nothing to us, Donna answered. Things that could be written like help us or help Lou. But Lou wasn't in any kind of jeopardy at the time. Who us was, we didn't know. Still, the thing that was weird was that one was that the notes would be written in pencil, and when we tried to find one, there wasn't one pencil in the apartment. And the paper it wrote on was parchment. I tore the apartment apart looking for parchment paper, and again, neither of us had any such thing. Well, it sounds like someone had a key to your apartment and was playing a sick joke on you, Ed stated flatly. That's exactly what we thought, said Donna. So we did little things like put marks on the windows and doors or arrange the rugs so that anyone who came in here would leave a trace that we could see, but never once did it turn out that there was a real outside intruder. While the doll was moving around and we'd become suspicious as burglars, something else screwy happened, Angie added next. The Annabelle doll was sitting on Donna's bed, as was usual. When we came home one night, there was blood on the back of its hand, and there were 3 drops of blood on its chest. God, that really scared us, Donna said frankly. Did you notice any other kind of phenomena occur in the apartment? Ed asked then. One time around Christmas, we found a little chocolate boot on the stereo that none of us had bought. Presumably, it came from Annabelle, said Angie. The doll liked chocolate. A good doll. I like chocolate. When did you come to determine there was a spirit associated with the doll? Questioned Lorraine. We knew something unusual was going on, Donna answered. The doll did change rooms by itself. It did pose in different gestures. We all saw it. But we wanted to know why. Was there maybe some plausible reason why the doll was moving? So Angie and I got in touch with a woman who is a medium. That was about a month, maybe 6 weeks after all this stuff started to happen. What'd you find out? We learned that... What did you find out? We learned that. Oh, I thought that it was happening in here. That really had me worried. First people move out of here that were in here, somebody else was driving that sidewinder. It's all right, you're going to smart around. You tell when they get scared. They're trying to overcompensate. Like me, writing the pipe, lighting the pipe, smoking the pope. What did you find out? We learned that. Tell you what we learned. It's kind of hard to hold your mouth. Yeah, need a whole hand for it. Not whole hand for it. What got in here? What did you find out? You interested? What did you find out? We learned that a little girl died on this property. Donna told the Warrens. She was 7 years old, and her name was Annabelle. Annabelle Higgins. The Annabelle spirit said she played in the fields long ago, before these apartments were built. They were happy times for her, she told us. Now, you smart alecks better hope nobody died on these premises since you put that doll over there. Some poor spirit out there looking for a body. Am I boring you? The Annabelle spirit said she'd... You want to go home?
No, sir.
You know, when you get up in the morning, remember that Jesus said, if you hate in your heart, it's worse to hate your good, kind pastor to read you these bedtime stories. The Annabelle spirit said she'd played in the fields long ago before these apartments were built. They were happy times for her, she told us, because everyone around here was grown up and only concerned with their jobs. There was no one she could relate to except us. That's what the medium told them. The spirit conjured up and told them this. You say, oh, God, that couldn't happen. You ever read the Old Testament about the witch of Endor bringing up the spirit of Samuel? Huh?
Yes,
Annabelle felt we'd be able to understand her. That's why she began moving the rag doll. All Annabelle wanted was to be loved, and so she could, so she asked if she could stay with us and move into the doll. What could we do? Run like hell. What could we do, the nurses said. So we said yes. Am I boring you? Wait a minute here, Ed interjected. What do you mean it wanted to move into the doll? You mean it proposed to possess it? Right, that was the understanding, Donna replied. It seemed harmless enough. We're nurses, you know. We see suffering every day. We had compassion. Anyway, we called the doll Annabelle from that time on. You want to go home? Did you do anything different with the doll after you learned it was supposedly possessed by a little girl spirit named Annabelle? Asked Lorraine. Not really, said Donna. Well, of course, it wasn't a doll anymore. It was Annabelle. We couldn't ignore that fact. All right, before you go any further, let's back up a minute, Ed requested. First, you got the doll for your birthday. After a while, the doll began to move, or at least change places enough for you to notice it. This made you curious, so you decided to have a seance, and a spirit came across. It called itself Annabelle Higgins. This supposed little girl spirit was 7 years old and asked if it could live with you by possessing a toy doll. You said yes out of compassion. Then you renamed the doll Annabelle. Is that right? Right, said Donnie and Angie. Now, some of you relax right now. Just take comfort in the following fact. Most of you wouldn't be this dumb. I know how to make a rag doll raggeder. Well, there's a pattern I want you to see. There are limits on what demons can do. You got to open yourself up. Have you seen the ghost of a little girl at any time in this apartment? Ed asked. No, both the girls answered. You said a chocolate item showed up here once, said Ed. Has anything else strange ever happened you couldn't explain? One time, a statue lifted across the room, Donna recalled. Then it tumbled in the air and fell on the floor. None of us were near the statue. It was on the other side of the room. That incident frightened us totally. Let me ask you something else, Ed went on. Didn't you think that maybe you shouldn't have given the doll so much recognition? It wasn't a doll, Donna corrected him. It was the spirit of Annabelle we cared about. That's right, said Angie. I mean, before you knew anything about Annabelle, how were we to know anything, Donna asked? But looking back on it now, maybe we shouldn't have given the doll so much credence. Well, really, we saw the thing as being no more than a harmless mascot. It never hurt anything, at least until the other day. Let's try that again. We never heard anything, at least until the other day. We never heard anything, at least until the other day. We never heard anything. At least until the other day. You still think that what's moving the doll is the spirit of the little girl? Lorraine queried. What else could it be? Angie said in reply. It's a damn voodoo doll, that's what it is, Lou blurted out.
This is the end of side three. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side four. Thank you.